And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Another week closer to the season and another week closer to Erling Haaland in a blue shirt, with the excitement already growing about that transfer. The good news is that because of the World Cup, it's an early start to the 22-23 season. But the bad news is that we're still five and a bit weeks away from the Community Shield. So let's fill in that gap with a podcast. This is Why Always Us. It's your Manchester City show from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. Sam Lee is here.
Hello.
And Paul Byas is here as well.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Paul, Sam, you well?
Yeah. All good. Sun shining. No good. Football. What more could you ask for?
Yeah. But still work to do on the inside. That's the key, isn't it? You can read everything on City and more in The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod and sign up. You'll get these podcasts without the ads as well. So just sign up at theathletic.com/ManCityPod. I want to start with a quick kind of rundown of the latest lines on the transfers. So let's start with Mark Cucurella from Brighton, Paul. What's the latest on that?
So yeah, basically the latest is that as far as we know, Man City is going to start making contacts with Brighton. Pep wants Cucurella, Chiki wants Cucurella, City wants Cucurella. They want a natural left back, but it's not going to be kind of an easy path, because Brighton, of course, they just signed him last summer. They are expecting a tough negotiations, but let's see what happens, because for what I got from City's camp, from Cucurella's camp, they are confident that the deal can be struck. Cucurella wants to go to City. All the parts know that probably Chelsea is going to get into the mix, with Marcos Alonso leaving Chelsea probably. But Cucurella wants to play at City, wants to play under Pep Guardiola. So that's a big step, I guess. And yeah, let's see where it all ends up. But it's not going to be something that it's going to be done just the very next day, because I think that it's going to be a kind of a tough negotiation path.
Yeah, there's a lot of time in there. It feels really weird because they've signed Haaland already. It feels like the transfer window's well underway, but actually it's only been open for a few days and there's still a long way to go. Sam, we were talking about left-backs a lot over the last 2 years or so. Zinchenko and Ake have both been told they can go if the right offers come, haven't they? That was the situation at the end of last season.
I want to get to the bottom of this with Ake, but I think basically the situation there is the same as, you know, applies to anyone. Like, if you're not happy with your football, because 2 years down the line, you know, when he was signed, it was, okay, well, he's going to be fourth choice, but it was going into the pandemic season. There'd be loads of injuries. There'd be loads of COVID breaks. He'll play plenty of football, but he hasn't played loads, has he? And at the end of the season, I'm not even convinced he was that injured, you know, in the last couple of games. I may be wrong.
Cue us.
Yeah. Oh, okay. There we go. But yeah, so he hasn't played a lot over the last 2 years, and it's to the point where, well, okay, if you do want to go somewhere else, then absolutely fine. But I mean, I know he had no intention of going in January. There was the, you know, the usual links to AC Milan. You know, that's just people just picking names out of thin air. I think this time, you know, there will be interest. And if he does, if he does want to go or slash is tempted, then, you know, City won't stand in his way, which, you know, that's not, I'm not saying it's not news, but, you know, we know that's the
situation.
Yeah. But I mean, he has loved being at City, loves working with Guardiola. Like, this year, he felt like he'd really come on and finally got to grips with it, because we have this conversation every week about Grealish, and we have this conversation every week about basically every other player who's come in. But because he didn't play so much anyway in the first season, and not so much in the second season anyway, even though when he did play in the second half of the season, I'd say he was really good, and I think most people agree with that. Yeah. He has gone through that same kind of need a year to settle in, because it's a different type of defending. You know, he was defending deep with Bournemouth, more defending than playing out you know, you're under the cosh a lot in a team like that, and all of a sudden you're not doing much defending. You've got to be better on the ball. You're 40 yards higher up the pitch, and that took a while to adapt to. So he's adapted to that. I think he's one of those players. I mean, I don't know what the actual competition would be like, because I'd imagine Ruben Dias wins it, but apparently one of those players just like extra training in the morning, you know, one of the first ones in, that kind of thing. So yeah, as of January, he was just like, no, I'm fine here. But obviously in the summer, it's always an interesting time to kind of reassess the options, yeah, isn't it? And with Zinchenko, I think, you know, Zinchenko is actually like, okay, let's go now. Let's go and get more regular football elsewhere. Because obviously in the past, we've talked about this a lot, but he's had offers, and like basically Cheeky was saying, look, can you just go? Like, everything's sorted. Like, we've got a fee agreed and everything. Will you just go? And he was like, no, I'm staying here. And that was when he was like really on the outside to get in. And even when was it? It was when this summer they signed Dias, they were considering selling him.
Yeah.
It's like, just keep this guy. Just keep this guy. Like, keep this guy in the squad. But obviously it's got to the stage now where if he does want to go, then I'm not going to say start keeping players against their will. But my feelings on Zinchenko are clear. Like, as long as physically possible, he should be staying at City.
Yeah. Paul, there's the other arrivals, potentially. The other big one is Calvin Phillips from Leeds. Has there been any movement on that?
As far as I know, again, there's no like big advance on that. Basically, because City, before completing any new signing, they need to sell. They need to offload some players. There's this kind of thing that Cheeky is kind of like advancing some work, like doing like some more stuff in terms of like agreeing fees and just making clear what City is expected to pay like in every deal. But in terms of completing it, it's not going to happen unless City sells some players. So I guess that the departure list is kind of more important now in terms of like, just closing new signings. But yeah, of course, we know that Cucurella and Phillips are the two names on the top of the list. Then we'll see who leaves that club.
Yeah, and just in terms of Cheeky, like agreeing on the parameters and stuff, like, yeah. I think with Phillips, the feeling I get is that basically everything's in place with that. It's just a question of kind of getting over the line. And as we know with Grealish, obviously Grealish was slightly different because there was a release clause, everyone knows now. But that was the whole reason there was such big controversy last summer, was because people were talking about it being sorted like before the Euros had even started. And then obviously it got completed in August, but it was all in place. I kind of get the feeling that that's it with Phillips. Like, there's no really any other options. Like, Phillips is expecting to come. I think Leeds are ready for him to go. And, you know, we're looking at replacements. City are obviously kind of planning for him to come, but it's all just a question of executing it. And these things take time. And as Paul says, you know, City want to get players out first, because I don't know, I guess after last summer, when so many players could have gone, you can't just rely on players going and balancing the books, you know, because they've already bought two players. I'm not saying it's for mega money, the kind of Haaland and Alvarez combined, but I don't think they'll want to start going, okay, 150 million spent, whatever, before bringing back
something,
you know, 40, 50. And obviously with where we may be going next with Sterling as well, then I guess that comes into the equation.
Well, I was going to say, Sam, actually, like we talked in great detail about Jesus to Arsenal earlier in the year. We've talked at fairly great length in the past about Bernardo potentially leaving and kind of the feeling that, you know, we don't really want him to go and we'd rather he stay around. But actually, if he wants to leave, then, you know, it's a problem that City could solve. Sterling to Chelsea seems like I think that's insane. I genuinely think that's insane, because I think he would seriously strengthen a rival of City's.
Yeah, it's funny because it was a bit like we were talking last week about everyone kind of getting anxious about the Haaland announcement. But, you know, from our point of view, you kind of, you know what's going on. You know it's all sorted and it's just a matter of time. So, like, there was no kind of twitchiness or... It was just funny to see people go, oh, what's going on? What's going on? Oh, what's the delay? What's the delay? Because it's going to happen. And it's a bit like that with Sterling. Like, you're saying it's like madness and hard to comprehend. It's kind of like I've been so open to the possibility of Sterling going for like more than a year. And I can't remember exactly what made me think it was Chelsea, but I can't say I had any kind of info that it was going to be Chelsea. But I always had a hunch for like a month or so that basically that would be the best option, because I don't think he's going to a top club in Spain. I don't think, you know, Bayern's not an option. PSG, I don't think that's an option. What else is there? Juve, I don't know about Juve, but I'm guessing it's not an option. And then in England, we know that, like, David Ornstein did that story that he wants to go to an elite club, and that ruled out Tottenham and Arsenal. And that leaves Chelsea and it leaves Liverpool. And I think he would go to Liverpool. You know, from what I hear, he would go to Liverpool, but that's not an option. So it only is Chelsea. And then obviously, part of Paul's Cook career story at the weekend was that, you know, City were expecting something from Chelsea. And then, you know, on Sunday, it's kind of come out. But yeah, so on that one hand, I've been looking at it for so long thinking, well, Sterling wants to go here. It wouldn't be a surprise at all if he did. And on the other hand, you've now got the situation where it's like, actually, he could just go to Chelsea, and they are one of the rivals to City, and I don't expect them to be challenging City and Liverpool next season unless City and Liverpool drop off. But if you're talking about somebody who could make a difference to a rival, then Sterling would be one of them. Yeah. And it's a weird one. I mean, look, there'll be another day to talk about what his legacy would be, because, you know, we're far from certain that he is going to go. But it's a weird one, because I think a lot of City fans, if the story was that City were going to sell Raheem Sterling abroad, first of all, fine, but even to Chelsea, but then they were going to bring in someone like Nkunku or something, or just they were going to replace him with Rafael Leao, I think people would be like, okay, yeah, we can trade up. But the idea that he would go and not be replaced, I think, has spooked a lot of people who generally wouldn't mind if Sterling left, because, you know, I know loads of people who got frustrated with him over the last, like, 2-3 seasons for being inconsistent. So yeah. it's a really interesting one.
I was going to say, Paul, he's been in and out of the side, and the whole problem with the contract is that, you know, he wants guarantees that he's going to be in the side. And I mean, first off, Guardiola won't give that sort of guarantee anyway. But second off, yeah, when the crunch time has come in the last couple of seasons, he hasn't been in the team, has he?
Yeah, I think it's not a new scenario that the Sterling could leave, and probably no potential replacement could come, because at the end of last summer he was offered to Barcelona and he decided not to go. And probably he wasn't expected with a replacement back there. In January, it was kind of the same, when Barcelona executives, like, in kind of an off-the-record gathering, they admitted that they were talking about signing a Sterling, and City wasn't planning on a new backup player. So I think that Sterling has been in that position for quite a bit of time now. As you were saying, you can feel that in the crunch time of the last two seasons, probably he has not been there. He was there on the Champions League final, but he did not have a great game in there. I think that it's been proved that probably Pep has lost a bit of confidence on him. So it kind of, in that shake-up that we have mentioned a lot on those talks, and in this podcast, I think that Sterling could be a part of it. The thing that he's going to Chelsea probably makes it more painful. But if you think about it, it's just what Sam was saying now. There's probably no other option, because no Italian team can afford it. No Spanish teams can afford it. PSG is probably not going to sign him. So they're just like Premier League teams. And if that's the only way, and you want to offload him just to try to change it to a new era, so this is what it is. So let's see what happens. But I think that I fear that it's like the only way that he has to go from City.
Yeah, I think I think not playing against Real Madrid, I don't want to say the final straw, because he probably, you know, made his mind up, but not playing against Real Madrid, yeah, in either leg starting was the kind, well, of that was like,
played,
okay,
on the extra time, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, but not on being picked to start, yeah, that, yeah, game. Yeah, like, oh, those, yeah, big, yeah, games, yeah, those are the ones he wanted. So there was obviously a story, wasn't there, in January that he's going to sign a new contract, and that was when he got Player of the Month for December, and he was back in the team and playing really well. And it looked, you know, just purely going by the media things, you'd be like, okay, something's changed. But like I said, I remember we did a podcast on it. I think it was in an international break. I wrote an article on it, and the situation was he was thinking, well, it's around Christmas, there's injuries and there's COVID. Let's see how I am at the end of the season. Let's see if I'm playing in the big games that really matter. And ultimately, he wasn't. So he wasn't thinking about signing a new contract then. And then, like I say, if it wasn't the final straw, the Madrid games, then it was, you know, a kind of significant thing that made it like, okay, yeah, let's look for other things. So, yeah, like I say, from my point of view, it's not a surprise. But, I mean, the fact Sterling to Chelsea should be like a massive transfer. Like that should, yeah, be one of the biggest transfers of the summer. It's absolutely crazy. But I think it'll be a good move for him.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
To do this bit of the podcast, because we're going to talk a bit about Haaland again now, I'd like to introduce Jim, who runs the Twitter account Man City Tactics. Hi, Jim.
All right, lads.
I just realised I got your at name wrong as well. You're actually City _ Tactics, aren't you?
Yeah, the vital _. Don't
yeah,
forget
there we
it.
Go. So, Jim, we've just talked for nearly 15 minutes about the change in shape of the squad. Didn't even mention that Alvarez is coming in all of that as well. How do you think it kind of all points to next season? Because obviously now they've got the centre forward in Haaland, they've got that number nine figure. They, you know, the front line could look very different if both Jesus and Sterling do complete transfers away this summer. It should be interesting, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Those two going as well, that feeds into everything, I think. Like they're your runners. So is that being replaced by Haaland? Yeah, potentially. But will it be a change of shape? I think they might be. So I think it's interesting to start with where we've been for the last couple of years and how we've slowed right down. Just like exerting control has been the main thing. So playing with a false nine, playing with wide wingers, stringing five across the top when we've got set up possession, and playing like high in the opponent's half. And what that creates is the control, but it also creates an issue with the ball over the top. You could get done by that, but we've used Walker as like our insurance policy there. So that's sort of like where we're coming from. And I think, but in recent months, there's been a bit of a change in that. So when De Bruyne got back in the team, especially for like the big matches, we're almost playing a double pivot with Rodri and either Bernardo or Gundogan. And De Bruyne is playing high, basically. So it's, you could call it a 4-2-3-1, you could call it a 4-2-4, whatever. But basically, De Bruyne waits off, like upfield, for transition opportunities, which we've not seen much before the last few months. But if you remember back to like the Brighton game, Liverpool, Real Madrid and stuff, there's loads of times where De Bruyne is getting the ball, running with it, and we're creating chances. Completely different to how we've played in the previous couple of years, really.
Yeah.
And it's because we're not really playing 2-8s, we're playing De Bruyne high, and we're playing this double pivot. And I think that is sort of the direction of travel. I think that makes sense for Haaland coming in as well. So the role next to Rodri, I think, is really important. Like when Bernardo plays that, he plays it as a really energetic figure who's technically sound as well. And I think when Gundogan plays that role, we lose that energy, basically. The Atletico Madrid game, the second leg, was a good example of, we started to get overrun, and it was like that second half, and there was just no legs in that midfield. So I think the signing of Phillips, or the potential signing of Phillips, yeah, he's a six. He's cover for Rodri if we play 2-8s. But I think more importantly, he's a great double pivot guy because he's got the energy, he's got the technique. And I think you need that for that role. And I think that's the first piece of like, right, if we sign him, he'll be used there. He won't be used as an eight, I don't think. I don't think he's got that in his game. I think he'll be used as the backup six and the double pivot guy.
Yeah, it's interesting that, Sam, we talked in the past about the kind of eras of Guardiola teams at City and kind of how it's changed down the years. It does feel like this summer is one of those transitions, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's the Sterling going that makes the biggest difference, I think, or at least in terms of how we perceive it. Because when the Sterling stuff came out on Sunday, I think I've said this before, you know, in terms of Sterling and Jesus going, like I said it on this podcast, like they are your kind of dynamic wingers. But okay, like, it's not going to. I'm not saying it's going to be a disaster, because we've talked about Sterling not playing in so many games or starting so many games. So he's not been as integral as he was in previous years. And obviously Jesus, that mad stat, didn't play between like the end of December, didn't start a Premier League game between the end of December and that Liverpool game. So his situation, it's not like you could say either of them are integral, but just, yeah, like Jim says, you're kind of losing that dynamism there. Do you get it with Haaland? Possibly. So I'm not saying it's a disaster by any means, but it's that the idea of Sterling going and losing that pace and what he can offer all of a sudden makes you think everything is going to look very different next season. And yeah, it goes back to, I don't know if it goes back to Guardiola saying before the Champions League final last year when he was doing that interview with Rio Ferdinand, and he was like, how many Premier League titles did you win? And I think Ferdinand said, what, six? And he was like, and how often was the team the same from one year to the next? He was like, you have to move, you have to shake. And obviously they were expecting that last summer with all the players who could have gone, and it didn't happen. And obviously we're bringing Kane in, didn't happen. So they carried on as normal and they did really well, obviously, in the Premier League in particular. But, you know, getting so close to the final in the Champions League and all that, so fine. But yeah, now it's like, okay, this is going to look very different. Like I say, I think they should keep Zinchenko, but I obviously understand that if he wants to go and there's an offer, then you let it happen. I mean, we haven't even talked about Bernardo Silva in all of this. I mean, Paul, do you want to give a little summary of that so I'm not talking for so long?
No. We can go for it. So my feeling, and that's pure opinion from mine, is that Bernardo will stay. That's just my personal feeling. Mm-hmm. It's nothing new that Bernardo would like to live in Spain, would like to play in Spain. We know that he struggled during the pandemic in Manchester for the life that he had to have. But if the club that has to sign him is Barcelona, they just don't have the resources to do it. They just don't have it. They just don't have the money. A lot of things need to happen. Plus, Barcelona is a club right now that is trying to renegotiate some salaries with some squad players. How can you afford to tell to your own players, please just cut your wages? But then splash like 90 million euros on Bernardo Silva. I mean, I think that if Barcelona is the option, it's not going to happen. It seems so unlikely from the point of view. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing new in like Bernardo wanting to go to Spain. But what I know as well is that Bernardo is not going to do anything wrong with Man City. He's happy with the club. He has nothing against the club, and he doesn't want to push for a bad exit. If he cannot go, he's going to stay, and he's going to stay happily, as he did last season, that it didn't go like quite badly. There's also two points that I would like to raise to Jim, more from a fan just pop point of view, watching Man City. This thing of the dynamic double pivot, I felt that probably, and that's just a question that I'm making because I don't have like any information on that, but probably like the double pivot was like a way from Pep just to protect the team from high pressing teams like Liverpool, like Real Madrid, like Brighton, because I felt that with Bernardo Silva in there, he could assure that like the build up, which is so important for Pep, could go up like smoothly. And probably he found that, yeah, just putting Bernardo next to Rodri, all the centre backs are gonna find options like in a more easy way and stuff. And I think that's, or from my point of view, it's what he was looking for with the double pivot. And then about the wingers, there's been a thing about Pep that he likes, and he has liked during all of his career, to make the pitch wide with the wingers. He doesn't want to make the pitch wide with wingbacks, although he has played with wingbacks with Man City, of course. But his preferred option is just to have like really open wingers. And probably it's going to be kind of different this season, because Man City is not going to have like really pure wingers in there. But let's see what happens. But I think that it's probably one of these change of eras that you were saying, that all the styles that Pep is playing with Man City, probably we're going to see something different next season. And let's see if having like a fullback like Marco Cucurella probably can make the pitch wide in some other kind of sense. And he is probably kind of looking to make the pitch wide with a fullback, something different. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Jim, yeah. I was going to say on that, do you think if it is to be Cucurea, does Walker's role change to be a wide fullback instead of the cover?
Yeah, potentially. And I think Paul's right. I think, you know, we've used the double pivot where, you know, teams have pressed us and it's using Bernardo or Gundogan in that build-up. But I do think the sign of Cucurella is like key to this. So I think that suggests there might be a change of shape across the team. So if you're playing Cucurella wide and potentially Walker or Cancelo even on the other side, and you're playing them almost as like overlapping fullbacks, which, yeah, Pep, I agree, like Pep said in the past, that he loves the wingers to play wide. He's liked that since he's a teenager and stuff. But like when we, in 17-18, like when we signed Mendy and Walker, by the October in that season, we'll play him three at the back and we'll play him wing backs. And then Mendy got injured and obviously it's everything went out the window from there. And we've basically played inverted fullbacks since then, or some sort of form of it. Yeah. But I think we're potentially going to see wider fullbacks, and it makes sense with the wingers that we left with if Sterling and Jesus leave. So Grealish was great at Villa, but if you look at quite a lot of his actions, it's when he's moving into the half space, when targets overlapping him, and he can make something happen in there. He's got options ahead of him, he's got options wide, whereas at City it's often goes out to him, he's on the touchline, he goes at the defender, but there's two defenders. He pulls it back to Cancelo. The defenders are happy for Cancelo to put the cross in because they think they can defend that. Now, that may change. The dynamic might change there. So you might say, right, let's keep the wide wingers, because if he pulls that ball back to Cancelo, they're not going to want Cancelo to just lump the ball in because Haaland's in there. But I think it does make sense for our wide options to play overlapping fullbacks. So even with like Mahrez and Palmer potentially on the right, Foden potentially on the right, because it gives, if say we've got our wingers of Foden and Grealish, they'll want to move inside and play in that half space. And I know they've not done it often recently, but they've not had the overlapping fullbacks there to do it. Plus, there's been a false nine in that position as well, taking up some of that space. So if Haaland's up against the centre-backs, then that area of the pitch opens up. You can push your wingers into that area to make stuff happen. And you've got overlapping fullbacks providing the whiff. This is all just like finger in the air stuff, but I think that makes sense in the signings and the sales that are potentially going to happen.
Would that play into Mahrez's hands as well, do you think, Jim?
Mahrez is a funny one because we've just basically used him to get one-on-one with his fullback wide and find him with a switch, which works really well for Mahrez because he's great in those situations. So I think it would be some like adaptation for him, but I don't see why it shouldn't work. You know, he can come inside, make stuff happen, use his overlapping fullback. But yeah, we've not really seen that from him since he's been here because we've just not played this way. So it's difficult to say, really.
Yeah, Sam, we mentioned at the end of last season as well about the potential, even though he'd had the final day that he had, the potential of Gundogan moving on. Does that factor into any of next season? Is that still possibly on the cards, do you know?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, it's gone quiet. It's on my list for stuff to kind of check out this week. But yeah, that's just another one of those, year left on the contract, do you want to go and play more regular football somewhere else? You know, the element with him, I can't remember if I've said this or not, but he was going to stop playing for Germany after the Euros last year. And then he spoke to, was it Hansi Flick, the new manager? And he was, oh, no, you're in the plans. You should, you know, stay playing regularly or whatever. So there's playing regularly. But also, apparently, he wants to have a more defined role. And maybe what we're talking about here, about him moving, sometimes he's playing deep, sometimes playing higher up. That doesn't necessarily help, in his view, with him playing for Germany.
Yeah.
And I think he said at the end of the season in an interview, look, obviously, you'd like to play in these games, because he didn't play against Real Madrid either. Was that either game? I can't remember. But he didn't play in at least one of them. Yeah. I'm guessing both from the start. So he's in that situation as well. You know, we've said before, Paul said before, you know, the timing of the story that he was going to leave, like, really pissed off City really pissed off Gundogan's people, you know, because it was like 6 days before the end of the season. But this was the point I was trying to make before we moved into the Bernardo situation, because I didn't want to just talk about Bernardo and then leave it. But the point is, in terms of this shakeup, they very rarely feel good, the shakeups, because I'm sure there'd be some, like, I suppose you could ask fans who you wouldn't mind selling or letting go and replace them with somebody else, and it all sounds very good. But these shakeups that have happened tend to be kind of brutal. And again, whenever I've talked about this in the past, it's always been that reference to the United teams that did it. But they were always getting rid of players that fans loved. And in this case, you know, if Zinchenko goes, but Sterling and Jesus, and, you know, whether we talk about Bernardo or Gundogan, but one of those two, obviously Gundogan final day heroic, so he's now a City legend because of that. Everyone loves Bernardo. If one of those were to, and I'm not saying they're going to, but if one of those were to as well, it's that profile of player and the kind of, oh, I'm not sure about how this leaves us up front in terms of losing the dynamism on the wings. It does start to feel like, okay, this is different, but not good different. Like,
yeah.
I was kind of alluding to it on Twitter yesterday. That's kind of how squad shakeups need to work. Like, it's not, you can't just go, oh yeah, well, I don't really like Mahrez, so he can go, and then we'll just bring in another winger and that'd be great. Like, sometimes they do feel quite clunky. But in terms of, like, feeling quite clunky, I think the last couple of years, City have gone into the season and they didn't get Messi a couple of years ago, and Diaz wasn't the first choice. And
I was
going to
say that the last few years they've gone into the season and I've been spending it thinking, going, well, they don't look cooked enough for me this season. Fact, yeah, they've got to win the title 2 years.
Yeah, that, in fact, that summer as well, I mentioned, I was like, how are they not signed a left back? Like, what are they actually doing? When normally, you know what I'm like, I'm pretty much like, well, you know, when it comes to Guardiola and even when it comes to, like, Bagheera-Stein, I'm just like, well, they know what they're doing more than I do. So even if it doesn't feel right to me, I'm just going to say, okay, well, they know better than I do, so let's see how it goes. But then I was like, what are they doing not signing a left back? And then obviously last year, if you remember, if you were to find some of the articles at the start of the season, not even like the one saying, oh, they definitely need a striker, but just the kind of tone, I'm sure my articles, like, the tone would have just been, I'm not really sure how this is going to go now they haven't got Kane. You know, this is something that Guardiola really wanted. He didn't get it. How is it going to go? Like, they go into seasons quite regularly when things feel not quite right. And it's kind of funny because 2 weeks ago, going into this season, you just think, well, City are absolutely going to piss it because they were great anyway, and now they've got Haaland. But all of a sudden now it's like, Juan Mar Leo going, how's that going to affect Guardiola? Because he was such a big thing for him. Like, how's Sterling and Jesus going? How's that going to affect the forward line? Because now you need Cole Palmer to actually make a big contribution straight away. You need Grealish. You know, there's more pressure on Grealish to actually step up now. Before, we could say, okay, yeah, well, second season will be fine. Now it needs to happen. And then, you need Foden's progression and fine. You need Haaland to settle in. You need Alvarez to adapt quickly. If there's going to be six players for the front three options, you're going to need Alvarez to adapt quickly. And all of a sudden, you've got question marks. So it's funny because you've got Haaland coming in 2-3 weeks ago, and you're like, oh, they're going to piss it. And now it's suddenly like, oh, how's this going to work? How's this going to work? How's this going to work? But, you know, I guess that is just squad updates for you. Like,
yeah.
It can be quite uncomfortable or clunky or feel it.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Paul, just on Alvarez, Guardiola's excited by him, isn't he? They accept that there's a massive jump up from Argentina to the Premier League, but they are excited about him.
Yeah. What I know is that, and just to quantify that excitement that you're asking me, several Premier League clubs has asked City if they would listen to like loan offer for him, some kind of offer for him, and City said no. We are not listening to offers right now. We want to see him on the preseason. We count on him for the next season, but let's see him on the preseason and then we're going to take a decision. So they're happy to just to have him on the squad. They rate him to that level. And I think that he can, or they believe that he can play alongside Haaland. He can add things alongside Haaland. I think that I'd say that now the plan is just to keep him. And there's like, No other idea in mind regarding Julian Alvarez. So let's see what's happened. Obviously, he played another great game. I think it was a couple of nights ago.
Every game, isn't it? He's been amazing again.
Yeah. So, I mean, more exciting stuff coming in, I guess.
Yeah. Jim, the question I guess I've got for you as a fan of City as well in all of this. Are you excited about the changes for next season? Because as much as it might feel like ripping a sticking plaster off and, you know, bits of it hurt and whatever, if there's still excitement and it's still a new look City, but still could damage teams in ways we've never seen before, it's still exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think Haaland's most exciting sign I can remember. You know, you're signing a world-class striker, great age. You know, even stuff like around him being like, you know, in the City kits when he was younger and stuff. It's all great, isn't it? And I think having such a big shake-up, if you know, potentially all these rumours come to pass, that is a slight concern in the short term, I think. Not in the medium or long term. I just think with the points tallies that City and Liverpool have been posting in the last few seasons, then if we take a little while to get to grips with that, you know, I think you've got to hit the ground running these days. We can't, like, have a period of time where we're adapting, really. You just don't have that option. But yeah, I think with Haaland as well, the way that, you know, the way that we can play to him, I think using him in tandem with De Bruyne, you know, that's perfect for transitions. But I think you have to play quicker into Haaland in that initial phase to see if you can get those opportunities. And I don't think, like, when Pep signed Lewandowski, I think he played sort of like wide or withdrawn and they played a false nine. I don't think that'll happen. But I think potentially.
The fume, but also actually imagine it, like Foden dropping off and creating space and Haaland just like charging in from like the right half space and just banging the ball in. That'd be unbelievable.
I think you've got to use him as like a box presence when you've got possession, like settled possession. But I think in that initial phase of like, let's get the ball in quickly into De Bruyne. You could almost use De Bruyne as like a false nine and have Haaland starting from a wide position. It's like in the Euros last summer, Belgium used De Bruyne and Lukaku like this. So De Bruyne just basically hovered around the centre circle and Lukaku was coming in off the right and it was basically right, let's get the ball into De Bruyne. Yeah. Let's get it out to Lukaku. And they caused all sorts of damage in the group games. I think that's potentially a way of using Haaland and not just having him like as your central striker, but
as the battering ram at the top.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and then when we get a settled possession, put him in the box as that box presence, which creates space elsewhere and use him like that. I don't think you'll see like what they did with Lewandowski, but you never know. But yeah, it's really exciting. I can't remember a more exciting time. I think, you know, losing Sterling and Jesus, it's a concern because, you know, we turn to them in some of the big matches, especially against like Liverpool's high line. But if you've got that threat from Haaland, if you're playing wider fullbacks, it's just an adaptation. If you remember that Liverpool game at home the other week, we almost did that with our fullbacks the other week. It was a couple of months back, wasn't it? We almost did that with our fullbacks anyway. Like Walker was just charging down the right hand side and getting in behind Robertson all the time. So it's, you know, we've sort of done it in some matches, in some of the bigger games.
Yeah, it's what you were saying after the game, Sam, that City played like Liverpool.
Yeah. They definitely did. That's the good thing about Haaland. I kind of wrote an article last week about the kind of players he can impact, you know, expect De Bruyne to get like 20 assists again and all that kind of stuff. But just even as an outball, like in those games, because Jesus is their best option as an outball. And I use some examples from the Liverpool match in April in the Premier League as that. But like so many times, just late in the game, and it's because obviously normally, apart from the last game of the City attacked the North Stand in the second half. So it's right down in front of us. And so many times I'm like, if you're going to knock the ball down, and Jesus is pretty good at battling for it, but he's not there all the time. But now all of a sudden, if it's just aim it towards Haaland or whatever, even just to scrap and fight. And we're in these games when City are more direct and they do battle and they do make runs in behind and whatever. Just so many low-key ways that he's going to make a massive difference. But like Alvarez as well, not so much as kind of a battering ram, but just to be that false nine that can link up on the halfway line. And like you should see the way he like darts into space if it becomes available. Yeah. He's so aggressive.
He looks so aggressive as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Like the precedence, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I've said before in an article, I think stylistically he's more suited to City than Haaland is in terms of being a false nine. But obviously that leap from Argentina, we'll see how it goes, and Haaland's a better player. But stylistically, he is absolutely perfect for City, and it goes back to what we were saying about them being really excited. And yeah, since they signed him, you know, Guardiola has maybe had more of a chance to see him and realise what he's about. And I think he's now at that stage where he's like, right, okay, can't wait to see this kid. I suppose the other thing as well is he's not going to have much of a summer, is he? Because when's he coming? Start of July,
yeah.
After the quarterfinals of the Libertadores, and then he'll be straight into pre-season. So there'll be an element of him being absolutely knackered as well. But he is very exciting.
Yeah, Paul, I don't want to go all stereotypical English football on you here, but there is an element that sometimes, I mean, me and Sam talked about it not so much last season, but in seasons gone by, where if things aren't going City's way and they hit the point where they start putting crosses into the box, you kind of go, well, this just isn't going to work. But now, if they've, like as Jim says, if they've got that presence of Haaland in there, not only have they got the options of more space around the edge of the box that the other creative players can work with, they have got somebody in the box who can get there first and who can win the ball in the air and who can actually do something when they put it in there.
Yeah, and I think that it's kind of one of the big reasons to sign a number nine, when Pep was saying that he felt that this club needed a number nine, of course, was for having a striker. But then those kind of games where probably teams are just sitting down, because we were talking now about at the beginning of the podcast about the like the double pivot with the double number six and stuff. But that kind of was more used when teams were pressing high. But City is probably going to play against more teams that are not going to press high, that are just going to sit down, wait on their box, and just wait for City's positional game not to hurt them too much. And in that kind of a scenario, I think that a man as a presence like Haaland is just ideal in there, just being a poacher, just waiting for a ball to fall into the box, putting the foot in there. I think that we saw, and we commented it last week on the podcast, that goal that he scored with Norway against Sweden, being just a menace in the box, just reading where the cross was going in, and in a short space, just running faster than the defender and heading it into the net. I think that it's something that we have to expect from Haaland, something that Haaland knows that is going to happen. I think that it has happened in the Bundesliga for him as well, and something that he has some margin to improve and to get better, which is somehow exciting for him as well, and something that he was looking for when he was joining City.
Yeah. Jim, the other angle to this, though, I guess, is City have been so good with that false nine setup. It brings benefits to the way that City play that maybe it doesn't bring to other teams that would try it. If you take that out and you put City back into a more traditional setup, does that cause problems?
Yeah, it potentially, like, the advantages that it's given us, you definitely lose. So quite often in City matches, you get the two opponents, like the two centre-backs for the opponents, are just left redundant. So they're not marking anybody and almost taken out of the game. So your numbers elsewhere you start to gain advantages, and there's just a bit of, and it just creates that advantage that false nine is dropping. So that five across the front are given a bit more space because the centre halves don't want to stop with them, don't want to drop with them. So I think there's definitely that aspect of it. I think if we move to overlapping fullbacks as well, which potentially could happen, then you lose Walker's ability to get back on those counters. So you're potentially leaving two centre backs isolated, which we saw in previous seasons can be a bit of a disaster until it was fixed, like at the beginning of, and was it 2021 after that Spurs game? Basically, at that time, Rodri was being overrun and his centre halves were being exposed, and we shifted it back so that Walker could be basically amongst the back line, and it pretty much sorted out all our issues. But I think this, with the Alvarez signing as well, that's really interesting because is there a situation where we end up going to two up front and like potentially even going to a 3-5-2? And I think what that what that offers is like you can put more creative players in midfield, so you could put a forward and a Grealish in midfield with De Bruyne and just have like a one pivot because you've got three at the back.
Sorry, I was just laughing, Jim, because we've had 2 years of no strikers, and the idea that City could go back to two up top is just like it's something from the Joe Royal days.
It sounds crazy.
Alvarez played off the striker the other night as well, like a kind of a withdrawn role. That's interesting.
It's too many players to fit in there, isn't it? I think with Foden and Grealish, though, like there's a bigger question of do they end up centrally? And I think the answer to that is probably yes at some point, but like I'm not sure how it works now with the players we've still got there. If someone like Bernardo leaves or Gundogan leaves, I think that opens up a bit of space in there. But obviously, it looks like we're losing our wing options, so the numbers probably don't add up for it at the moment. But I think putting someone like Foden in there, you know, he's got the potential to run games. His passing range is great. But I think Grealish could possibly benefit more from it just because of the way we use him on the wing. And I think his best attribute is like getting the ball, receiving it, turning, running at players and having options. And because he plays so wide in that wing position, unless we change the way we shape up and we do have an overlapping fullback, I think it takes that out of his game a lot. And potentially him playing centrally could be like the biggest benefit.
Yeah. Jim, the other aspect to this as well, I guess, that maybe differentiates it the upcoming season, even if it's a season of transition, that it would keep it different from the 1920 season is, well, two things really. Rodri's a lot more settled and he's a lot more prepared for the job that he's doing in the centre. And also the centre-backs aren't Fernandinho and Otamendi. Yeah. So
Rodri's amazing, isn't he? It's like he's still slow, isn't he? Let's face it. But the way he plays, he must be like the most intelligent footballer in the division because like... That's that way he's won possession back more than any player in the league. And he's just always there, isn't he? Like, it's incredible, really.
I just think of that Yaya Toure article on The Athletic, Sam, where he's talking about using your arse well. And Rodri doesn't just use his... Like, he uses his shoulders down for everything that he needs to do.
Yeah, he's effectively like Guardiola, isn't he? And Busquets is just another one in that mould. We had to do like the player of the season article, and I put it for him. You know, I think consistently he was there, and yeah, everything just in terms of the shoulders and the movement, like the amount of times when he's getting the ball in a tight area and you think he's being closed in on all sides, but it turns out there's another side that nobody's thought of, and he just moves his body and goes that way, and all of a sudden he can just ping it over to the other side of the pitch and sit you attacking again. Yeah, he's so important for them.
Yeah. And just to kind of wrap it up, Jim, what's your gut telling you about Foden and Grealish for next season? Because you talked, you know, about them potentially being on being wide. You talked about them potentially being in the middle. Will we see a bit of both, do you think? Or is he more likely to stick to what he knows and have them wide for the time being?
I think they'll probably stay wide for the time being because of the other departures. If Sterling and Jesus go, then, you know, someone's got to play there. We're only left with Mahrez and Palmer, really. Yeah, I think that wide role could change if you're getting Cucurella flying down the left and Walker or Cancelo flying down the right. And their role actually becomes more of a creative role in central areas, in the half spaces. And I think that could be beneficial for both of them.
And just on Palmer, Paul, I'm interested to kind of get a read for how much he might be involved next season, because you know he's only played a little bit for the City first team. It does seem a bit odd for them to. It seems a bit out of character for them to go right. He'll be the one that replaces, you know, the wide presence.
Yeah. Of course, I mean he's not going to be a starter, but City. A lot of City sources in the first team were like sad because Palmer didn't have the chance last season to make a step forward because of injuries. Because when he was ready to make a step forward in terms of like getting minutes in the Premier League in some games that he could have played, he was injured. He had some injury that didn't allow him to train like at 100% for 1 week straight. So now that he's expected to be fully recovered, one of the things that they have in mind is just to make room for him. Make room for him because in training ground, he has proved that he's a guy that they can rely on. He's fearless. He loves to take on players. He doesn't care about if the player that is just in front of him is Ruben Dias or is Lucas Bete. He just doesn't care. And I think that the position where they see him as of now is the right wing. It's a bit like Foden because they could probably play like in central positions, but as they are young, they are lively, they like to press, they like to run. So they want to take advantage of that, putting them up front because, of course, they want like dynamic forwards. And I think that for what they got, that they saw Palmer in there. So that's the plan that they have. Don't expect him to be a starter. I mean, it wouldn't be good for him. But they have to make room for Palmer. They want to do it. And it's something that is going to happen from my point of view. So, and it's quite exciting because probably him and McAtee are surely the best talents that City has on the academy right now.
Yeah. Sam, I want to finish with, did you see Palmer's Instagram story a few weeks ago where he was, he basically posted a thing that says, any goalkeepers in Manchester? He left me on red.
Did you actually message him?
Yeah, I messaged him. Said, "Yeah, I'm a keeper in Manchester. If you want to fire some shots at someone, I'm around."
Amazing. Yeah, like he's another one of these guys that just loves playing. Like plays all the time. Like last year, didn't the academy have loads of problems with COVID last year? And everyone was being like really careful. And there was Snapchats of him floating around, literally just playing like a midweek 11-a-side friendly for like some amateur team or whatever. Like he just plays all the time. He's obviously got that authentic local blend of, yeah, asking for goalkeepers in Manny as well, which I know Manchester people don't actually like.
I've never heard anyone call it Manchester. That is from, call it Manny. That is from Manchester.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, does Withenshaw count? That's the question.
Yeah, it definitely does, unfortunately. So it's seeping into the younger generation's language, and I don't like it.
Yeah,
so
when my son was born, he's going to be growing up saying it. It's going to be like a little dick. Yeah.
I think it's important he gets the minutes this season, though, because I think like Caldoon's on at the end of the season every year saying, yeah, we want 3 or 4 academy lads in. And basically, you've got Foden who, you know, he couldn't ignore. I think Palmer is of a standard now where you've got to push him into the first team if we're realistically going to start seeing these youngsters coming through.
Yeah. Right, well, that brings us to the end of this week's Why Always Us. So thank you very much to Sam Lee.
Yeah, cheers, guys. That was good. Nice little round table.
And to Paul Byers. Cheers, Paul.
Cheers, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And to our special guest, Jim. Jim, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm at City_tactics.
Lovely stuff. Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.